Coming up, I've got my old friend Chris Vernon. We're talking about everything going on around the NBA, our annual podcast we always record at NBA Summer League. After that, got a very fun interview. I swear, it's a fun interview with Alex Rodriguez and Mark Lowry, the new owners of the Minnesota Timberwolves. So stay tuned for that after my conversation with Chris Vernon, which is right now. Welcome back to the Kevin O'Connor Show. Joining me is my old friend, Murdo!
Kevin!
What up, Chris? I did your local show
yep.
earlier today. We talked about a whole bunch of prospects, and towards the end of the conversation, you guys set me up.
Oh, we
had to. It was an ambush.
An ambush. We had to ambush you.
And it was because of the post I made on social a few weeks back,
which ruined my X feed for at least a week.
Well, I'll read it to you word for word just to say refreshed. Ja Morant is overrated by Grizzlies fans. Subpar from three, inconsistent defense. This year got to the rim a career low percent of the time. Rarely healthy. Hasn't played in 75% of games in a year since 2021. Morant is somewhere around the NBA's 40th to 50th best player. Good, not great. Chris?
I mean, honestly, maybe your worst take ever.
Really?
I mean, come on, Kevin. When Ja Morant plays, they win, and they win at an extremely high level, okay? They've won over 60% of their games when he's on the court, regardless of who the other four guys are. He makes everybody on the team better, and any season that he has played in, until last year where the season went to hell at the last, 4 weeks of the season, they were the two seed virtually the whole year. And they were the two seed the last year he was healthy before that. And they were the two seed the last year he was healthy before that. He has certainly not been available nearly as much as you need him to be available to achieve what you want to achieve. But straight talent-wise, look, if you have Ja Morant on your team, you're going to be good. And that is said about what? How many players in the league can you say they could make you good? If that's a true superstar. A true superstar is that guy's on the team and that team is good. End of story. Devin Booker's on teams and they're not any good. There's a whole lot of guys that are listed on your list that aren't the main guys. They're not the ones that control everything. And they're not dictating whether their team can win or lose these games. And is he available enough? I would argue no, of course, right? That's a silly argument to make. He has had bad luck for sure, injury-wise, and then made some bad choices, obviously, a few years ago. But if he didn't make the bad choices a few years ago, we're talking about a guy that's already been All-NBA twice. He's 100% making All-NBA that season. And then he ruined it, right?
Yes.
With the suspension.
I mean, look,
at the end.
My concerns with Ja. I am concerned about the fact he's not getting to the rim as often. I'm concerned about the fact his three-point jumper is still incredibly inconsistent. I'm concerned about the fact that he's very up and down defensively. He had some great moments early in the year, some very poor moments midway through the year defensively. He's very up and down. So with Ja, you can't trust him to be on the floor. When he's on the floor, he's been
very injured.
He's not been at peak levels.
Let me take it one by one.
Okay, all right.
The first one is, you've got to look at the last month of the season, right, where they did not have a ton of success as a team, but that was Taylor Jenkins. Like, he hated that offense. Desmond Bane didn't like the offense ran really well. It was amazing for guys 5 through 12, right? But for the best players, it was not accentuating them the most, right? That was a no-ball screen offense. And you look at the last month.
It's
and go
very
look,
unusual.
Go, and go look
it
at
it. It was unlike any right. offense we've ever seen in the
and
NBA.
And go look at his numbers when they started letting Zach Edey set high ball
pick
screens.
And roll. Yeah. Both simple stuff.
And guess who else it unlocked? Zach Edey. Zach Edey was infinitely better after that took place. And so what I would tell you is I think you're going to see a radically different Ja Morant this year under Tomas Isolo, their new coach, because even in those games right before Taylor was let go, and then once Isolo took over, and then even into the playoffs, you saw a lot more of Ja Morant being able to be the best version of himself. I would argue that last year's, that a lot of those numbers are not a function of Ja Morant just magically getting worse. It was an offense that was an equal opportunity offense, of which, I mean, there was way too many possessions where he gets off the ball at the top and then he's just standing in the corner.
Well, unfortunately, right? He's not a reliable spot-up shooter, so he loses all value in those situations.
Maybe so, but, I mean, look, it has developed at a slower rate than anybody wants it to, but it's not like he's miserable. It's not like he's a miserable three-point shooter.
He's not making you fearful as a defense.
But it's not far off. It's not far off from being able to be fine, right?
And, of course,
you hit 38% instead of 34%.
Sure. You can always have late career development. Jason Kidd, all these older guards, they develop it over the course of time. Even like a Rondo type got a little bit better over the course of time as their spot-up shooter. What do you make of the Grizzlies, their offseason decisions? They sign Ty Jerome. They draft Javon Small. They draft Jemai Meshack in the second round, two guards, signing a guard in Jerome. Is this about offering support behind Ja for if he's missing games, or what's the vision of this offense with all these guards?
I think you have – okay, so I think Meshack and Small will probably just be Memphis Hustle right?
In all likelihood. But they're still guards nonetheless.
The Jerome thing gives you insurance along with Scottie Pippen Jr., who really came along
very, very good
last year, right? Yeah. So now, in between those, you know, you've got multiple guys that can handle the ball. And I think one of the lessons of the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Indiana Pacers, for that matter, was they wanted to find toughness and they wanted to find guys that can handle the basketball, right? So Meshack is a super interesting case because I don't think that kid's not – that's an undrafted kid if the NBA season doesn't play out the way it does, right? But people look at it and they go, you know what? Like this whole – and you cover the draft a lot more than I do. This whole draft, it felt like the three things that people were talking about were wingspan, defense, and optionality, right? Because those were the lessons of those teams, right? Oklahoma City could play against Denver, and they've got to deal with this tremendous big guy. And then they could have to go play against Minnesota, but then they could have to play against smaller teams. And the same goes with Indiana on the other side, right, where they were able to deal with different types of teams. So then that buzzword came in, optionality. But the defense and the wingspan thing – the lesson of and part of the Oklahoma City thing was I thought that people overlooked necessarily offensive detriment in order to say that this guy has the length and this guy can defend his position. Because what we learned is that Oklahoma City throughout the entire season, and then it even carried over to the playoffs, 25% of their points are off of turnovers. You don't have to be a great half court offensive player if you're able to create, right? Can you lock down your guy? Can you knock down a couple corner threes? But more importantly, can you create us extra possessions where we're running out the other way? Because anybody can hit layups. And so I do think that, like, with the Smalls and the Meshacks, like, and I just saw somebody just sent me another clip of another GM. Everybody's saying we want dogs now. Everybody's saying we want toughness
Elijah
now.
Martin in Toronto, guys like that. Yes.
Everybody's saying we want dogs. We want toughness. We want optionality. It's all code for whoever wins, right? Everybody wants. So, like, it was great to be a big guy after Jokic won, you know? And then Minnesota goes and they load up and it works out perfectly. But they face Denver around early. And then New York goes, and they say, well, hell, we're going to have to deal with the Celtics. And they did. But they faced them around early. And then they had to deal with the Pacers. And so that's where the optionality thing comes in. But so many of these guys that even if they had some kind of offensive knocks, I think their stock ended up doing better if they were big and they could defend their positions, right? And so I think that's kind of what – you know, I think they're done with small guards. You see that they're trying to move off of the Cole Anthony thing. So I think that the – right? And I also think that what it exposed is once Ja Morant went out, obviously Scottie Pippen was able to play, but I mean, you looked around, you have one guy that could dribble the ball under duress. I'm saying when Kayson Wallace is a foot from you, can you dribble?
And now you have a number of them that you can turn to in those situations. Jaw on the bench or jaw sideline for any reason.
So it's always going to be a function of what beat you.
For sure.
Right.
It makes total sense. And I think what the Grizzlies did, they get a great return for Desmond Bane. Those picks, they could maybe flip those at some point if necessary. But you get Jerome at a really good price. He obviously stunk it up in the playoffs for the Cavaliers. But he still had a great season. And so you still like what he can bring. And for Memphis, look, I like the way they're building this thing out. It wouldn't surprise me if I vault Ja Morant back up my rankings next season.
I mean, at least ahead of Aaron Gordon and Spencer Dinwiddie or whoever. Nah,
I did not have him behind Spencer Dinwiddie. It's fake news over here. I had him behind Aaron Gordon, but Aaron Gordon has become a 40% guy from three. A higher volume
Aaron Gordon
shooter.
Could never be the best player on a good team.
But what does that mean? Best player on the on a team.
There's not that many guys that can be the best player on a good team.
Yeah, but like you can
There's
be.
Not.
You can be.
It's a short list.
You could be like the 15th or like the 20th best player on a team, but you could like you can be the 30th best second best player on a team. Like Aaron Gordon is one of the best second third best guys on a team. In the entire league. So, like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, how do you stack those guys up? It's really comparing apples and oranges. Right. Really, they don't belong on the same rankings.
Right.
You're right?
Role players and stars
yes,
don't. You're
exactly.
Right.
Like, you can't put Draymond Green on a ranking with other guys. Like, Draymond is its own thing. Right. Prime Draymond. Like, Prime Draymond was probably, like, the 40th best player in the league, 50th best player in the league.
I would argue better.
Maybe better. Maybe better.
Because if you're the best defender in the league, we just look at offense so much differently.
For sure. It's just hard to compare those types of guys. And so with Memphis, we're not going to see Cedric Coward here at Summer League. Sad, sad, sad.
Yeah, he was supposed to be signing autographs behind where we're recording, but
right
he's not
there.
Even in town as far as I know.
Yeah, I know. It's too bad. He's still dealing with that shoulder issue right now, seemingly knocking him out for all of Summer League. Hopefully back healthy. Hopefully, fingers crossed.
All these fans will still be excited for Armando Bacot, though, right?
Of course. And G.G. Jackson, year three, still the youngest guy.
No, I think they're replacing Cedric Coward with Armando Bacot. I don't know.
They just pull someone off the street and say, you look like Bacot.
No, he's played. He just played.
But with Coward,
yep.
Hey, I mean.
You gave us an A++.
A++++++. Plus. That's really what I sent my editors. I sent like 10 pluses.
You did?
Yeah.
We're all in on Cedric Coward.
What do you like about Cedric Coward, the basketball player? Forget the off-court stuff, his mind, the basketball player. What do you think of what do you like about him as a player?
Freakish wingspan.
Those guys don't fail.
No. I mean, they're just like the – you know, that's how we first came across Cedric Coward, hilariously, was Roser pulled a list of guys that were wing players drafted in the first round with wingspans over 7'2". And the list is just absolutely incredible. And Coward fit the mold of those guys. I love that he's worked his way to where he has become what he has become. Obviously great head on his shoulders, but basketball wise, it's the frame. It's the frame and the athleticism, right? Like
the shooting too.
And
40%
guys. 72% from 2 points.
Crazy. And it's not just
Zach Edey didn't shoot 72% from 2 points.
And it's not just layups, it's like pull up jumpers and stuff too.
72% over his college career from 2 points is a ridiculous statistic. Truly ridiculous. And he just does not take bad shots. He's figured out how to play basketball already, and it's almost like it's a nerd's dream, the shot chart. You know, when you look at it, it's like
threes and layups.
And efficient.
But he can use the mid-range, though.
Yes.
Like when I interviewed him, I asked him about, like, he's got these, like, really nice footwork on the turnaround jumpers and stuff. I was like, who are you watching? I'm expecting him to say Kobe.
Yeah.
He said Kobe. Right,
I mean, that was who he loved growing up.
Exactly, and so he's like, he says he tries to model his mid-range after Kobe, and it's like, it's sacrilegious to ever pull out these types of comparisons from players, right? It always is.
Right.
But with him, it's like I can't help but watch him and be reminded of Kawhi Leonard sometimes because he's got those long arms,
right?
But then just the way he moves, he's like very economical with his dribble. He doesn't have like the flashiest handle. He's not the quickest or the most explosive, but he's just very smart with his limited movements that he makes to get into those mid-range jumpers, to get into his shot. It's like, as that develops over time, like it did for Kawhi, I would not rule out him being one of the two, three best players in this entire draft class.
I would love to have seen him here. It's a shame. It's a shame.
It really is.
I mean, I wish, obviously, you've got to err on the side of caution when the kid's coming off a shoulder surgery.
A major shoulder issue, too.
And he was obviously able to show enough throughout the pre-draft workouts, but it'd be super cool to see him in a summer league setting, especially against a bunch of these guys that are either fighting for a job or, in some cases, you know, there's a lot of good second-year players here this year.
Especially in the game Memphis just played. They faced the Celtics, who got a bunch of dogs.
Ugo Gonzalez, Jordan Walsh flying around.
What were your first impressions of Ugo Gonzalez, the Celtics' first-round pick?
I think he's pretty good. I mean, I think he's probably a project, right? Like, I mean, yeah, he's raw. You know,
he flew around on defense. He had a possession, like, really. I mean, I think he almost like fell over.
He's working
so hard trying to stop the ball handling. He hit a three on the other end.
I think he looks to me like one of those guys that, like, I'm going to need to evaluate him next summer league.
I agree.
You know what I mean? To figure out what I think he's going to be. Another one, I'll give you another one, and I don't know where you were on this kid. Behringer, the one that got drafted by Minnesota.
Yeah.
Did you like him?
He had like two blocks on the first possession, seven blocks in the game.
Did you like him?
I liked him. I was surprised by him as a pick for Minnesota.
So I was talking to a guy that was I was talking to a European scout I know, and I was asking him about like the Euros that he liked. It's always interesting to talk to these guys. Loved Denman. Loved Igor. Right? They view basketball differently overseas. He loved Igor, and then he brought up Behringer to me, and he said when he played on the U18 team, that's the first time he was ever told what a short roll is. He didn't even know what it is.
Which is like a year ago.
He said he started playing basketball 3 years ago.
He's very, very
wrong. He said he was a soccer player. He's 6'11".
I know.
That's the one thing that stood out to me when I saw him. It's huge.
He moves like a soccer player, though, because he's so good with his feet. He can move laterally on the perimeter and switch.
I mean, if he could just finish around the basket and they could teach him how to play. Again, another really raw one. He needs to hit free throws.
Like, he's like a 50% guy from the line. He's got to be a non-hackable free throw shooter.
I mean, he's raw, but, I mean, good grief.
His defense is crazy.
He's long, too.
Active, and, like, I think with him it's not just, like, it comes and goes.
Yeah.
He's always on. With his intensity on defense, so I think he stood out for sure day one.
Because I didn't know these guys. I don't know Hugo Gonzalez. Yeah, I don't know Behringer. I don't know. But when I watched Hugo Gonzalez today, I was like, all right, let me see him. Let me see him next year. Let him play a year of this American basketball, and we'll kind of get it. Because I bet he'll probably play a lot for the Maine Red Claws.
The Maine Celtics now.
Celtics, the name. Okay.
But it is interesting with Minnesota. They draft Behringer in the first round, and then another big in the second round. Gobert was involved in trade talks throughout this entire process for Kevin Durant. It's pretty clear to me that they are building this out behind Gobert for either replacing him when he's a free agent or making him expendable as a trade guy and having young guys at the center spot rather than a very expensive Rudy Gobert. I'm sure that must put a smile on your face, right?
No, I was going to tell you, why don't you ask A-Rod when you have him on? Just ask him, hey, A-Rod, seems like you're trying to run Rudy Gobert, my guy, out of town.
My guy, I know.
But yeah,
you know he signed me a jersey? You know he's the greatest defender of our generation?
And then I want you to tell A-Rod that you still hate his guts.
I am going to tell him that.
You are?
Yeah.
From your childhood?
Yeah, from my childhood.
You say,
Say,
when you slap the ball out of
Veritex. You know, I watched that on YouTube this morning.
Veritex? When he slapped the ball out of Veritex? Just Arroyo.
Yeah.
Oh, it was a Brandon. Pitcher, Bronson Arroyo. Yeah, yep. That's right.
Yep.
When he slapped the ball out of his.
What a Bush League move, huh? It really was.
You got to tell him.
It was so slimy.
I can't wait to watch A-Rod on you.
It was such a slimy move.
I can't wait to watch A-Rod on with you. I want it to be like your Jim Rome Jim
Everett.
He comes
over and strangles
me. Your Jim Rome. Hey, be like, number one, what you did to my Red Sox was abominable. Just a slime ball move. Number two, how dare you get rid of my favorite basketball player ever, Rudy Gobert.
Even try to do it.
You drafted.
Who do you think you are?
Behringer or Barnagnier.
I mean, it's only forgivable because it's another French center.
Yeah.
So I can forgive it.
Yeah.
I can forgive it in that case.
Hold that thought, and we'll be right back.
Hello.
Dallas. Cooper Flagg makes his debut yesterday. Yeah. 5 for 21 in the game. A lot of great moments, though. What's Chris Vernon's first impressions of Cooper Flagg?
So, look, I'm going to be honest with you. I will never get out of my head. You will remember this because we were doing the mismatch together at the time. I came on the mismatch and I told you I saw the best 16-year-old I've ever seen in my life. I watched him have a EYBL game where he had 14 blocks in the game. And I'm like, okay. Like, he is as sure of a thing as a sure thing can be. I don't give a damn what he did last night. Like, again, he reclassed, went to Duke, and was named the best player in college basketball that is filled. Like, Auburn's team is like 30.
They have Janai a literal 28-year-old.
I saw Janai Broom, and I'm like Janai Broom was second in player of the year to Cooper Flagg.
He's 23, 24, I think.
And he looks 38, right? I mean, like, the idea that kid should have been a
Cooper
senior.
Cooper can barely grow out of this thing on his chin.
He should have been a senior in high school.
Yeah.
And he was the best player in all of college basketball, which now is radically different because guys are staying because they can make the money. And it's better. Like, the players are better because they're older and they all transfer. They all transfer. And so the teams that you saw at the end of the season, I mean, those teams are loaded. They're loaded. And it's like the best player from this team and the best player from that team and the best player from that team and the best player from that team, and they all end up on the same team, right?
It's a different world in college basketball.
I mean,
you think
about this. If it doesn't go, like, to harken back to what we were talking about earlier, if it doesn't go the way it went for Coward in the pre-draft, he's playing at Duke next year.
Mm-hmm. Next to Boozer.
I mean, you got to be kidding me.
I mean, they are the national title favorites, I think.
And he would have made a fortune.
Yes.
Right? That, what's the kid's name that's going to Florida that I told you I really like? I remember one of the last times we talked about the draft and I told you I thought the guy was too low. Boogie Flynn. He is going to make a fortune at Florida.
Yeah.
You know what they're paying that kid to go there?
It's crazy.
Some of the numbers they were throwing around, I mean, it's millions and millions of dollars.
Way more than what a second-round pick makes.
All I'm saying is Boogie Flynn, in any other era, is in this draft.
Yeah.
He's in the draft, right? Yep. Like, he was a McDonald's All-American, the whole thing. He would have gotten drafted.
And that's what helped out the Mayshaks of the world move up into the second round.
He would have gotten drafted off of his high school talent, right?
Yes.
If nothing else, they don't even care that he got injured at Arkansas, didn't play enough, whatever. Team was better without him, all this crap, right? None of that. They would have just said, all right, we're going to throw away Arkansas. This kid was one of the best players in that entire high school class. This kid is going to be awesome. And they would have drafted him. And instead, so that's what I'm saying is the environment of which a kid that was supposed to be a senior in high school went and became the National Player of the Year. I don't care if he went 5 for 21, because the people that knock him for being 5 for 21, if the next game he plays, he goes 12 for 16 and has 36 points, it's not shocking anybody.
No, it doesn't. I want to bring it back to your point about NIL and how that changed college basketball. Isn't this a good thing for the NBA, though?
Of course.
Getting to see these guys for more years and see what they become over 2, 3, 4 years instead of just one.
Most importantly, and I mean this, you never know. Like, we were talking about this with Coward, right? We love his head. We love the athletic ability. We love the story. We love everything. You cannot know, and you can't predict how a guy is going to react. He just signed. He's going to make $23 million.
Yeah.
No matter what the hell happens. Are you fine with that? There is a lot of guys that are fine with that. That was the goal. I just hit it.
Yeah, can last a long time.
They just hit the lottery. No, they hit the lottery.
Yeah.
Right? They've already won.
Yeah.
Right? The ones that become the great ones, they're not in it for that.
Yes.
Right?
No complacency.
And so that's what I'm saying.
That's not the mission.
So that's what I'm saying. One of the things is you ain't putting money in these kids' pockets for the first time when they get to the NBA.
Great point.
A lot of these kids, they grew up and they didn't have a lot. And now all of a sudden, I remember years ago, there was this guy that I interviewed. He was a GM for one of the teams. And his team, this is how long I've been coming to this thing, did not come to Summer League. Okay?
Yeah.
Did not come to Vegas. They didn't used to have, every team participates now. Yeah. Did not used to be like that. There was a number of teams that didn't. And I remember asking him, I was like, because he had a big rookie on his team. Why are you guys not in Vegas? And he said, as long as I'm running a team, this guy no longer runs a team. He said, I would never take my team to Vegas. Because this guy was a former agent. And he said, I've never understood how we get a lot of these guys, they've never had money in their life. Then we give them $5 million. And the first thing we do is fly them out to Las Vegas. He said, you know how many markers I had to give clients over the years? You know, I'm saying, like, you know, bounce forwards.
Yeah.
Because they had already blown money before they ever even had money.
Crazy.
And so I do think that that is an element to it, is like the NBA, part of growing up is what you do the first time you've got money in your pocket and you've got more responsibility. These kids now, I mean, hell, they're getting money in their pocket. A.J. DeBancer was getting paid to play in high school.
$7 million at BYU now.
No, but he got paid to play his senior year.
Yeah.
Yep. So, I mean, he's already got money. I'll give you another one. On the other hand, you know, Mike Bibby's coaching this team in Sacramento State or whatever, and he's got Mikey Williams going. Mikey Williams was, I mean, nobody had more Instagram followers.
Yeah,
and he was coming to play for Penny Hardaway in Memphis before the tragedy at his house took place, right? I don't want to say tragedy. Nobody died. But, I mean, somebody shot bullets at a car, and he ended up getting off for it, whatever. He went – do you even know what happened to him?
No, tell me.
He went and played at Central Florida last year. Did you hear his name?
Nope, of course not.
This guy had Rolls Royces and Lamborghinis in high school.
Famous Instagram influencer,
right?
Basically.
The biggest.
Yeah.
The biggest, right? He went to Central Florida.
Just like yesterday.
You never heard his name last year. Never once.
No.
He's now going to go play at Sacramento State, where Shaq's the GM and Mike Bibby's the coach. And maybe the kid gets it back on track, but I'm just saying, what is the – I remember when Penny Hardaway signed him, and I remember I was having a discussion on our local show. What motivates you if you've got a Lamborghini in your driveway when you're a junior in high school?
It needs to be something more than that. You have to have that internal drive at that age where it's not about the rewards of the
– But I think it's hard. I mean
– It's hard for some kids, and those are the ones that are going to fizzle out. But for,
I think
but for other kids –
I would argue it's hard for any kid with a Lamborghini at 15.
I don't know if that's true because some people didn't aspire to have the Lambo. They just – they want to be – a star.
Yeah.
They want to be the best player. It's like a true love for basketball and not a true love for what basketball gives them.
Right.
Like there's just like a
that's true.
Between
them, I got it.
And that's like the tough part with like assessing these guys. You can talk to them and they can say all the right things, but sometimes it might just
that's
be right. word salad.
That's right.
Right? It's just the reality of it.
Oh, like you they're don't trained. Know. They're trained. They're media trained now.
For sure. I mean, like you're not going to get into DeAndre Ayton's anymore saying, what's your NBA goal? To get to my second contract. That was the most honest answer anybody has ever given.
I know.
Right?
Yes.
Like, it's hard to believe he actually said that, but I guess an oversight with his media training.
And that's the other thing. When you were talking about like why I think this is actually good for the NBA, the other thing is guys were leaving – after one whatever year of we can go back to the Boogie Flan thing, a whatever year at Arkansas, right? And he would 100% left because the goal was to get to the second contract,
yeah.
Right? Now that's not – like they can help a college team, so now they're actually going to become better basketball players because they're staying in college. And they're developing into men and more responsible and – their body's filling out and, like, all those things. I think it's easier to evaluate those guys.
In some ways, it could make the draft a little less interesting possibly.
Sure.
In terms of, like, randomness. But at the same time, there's always surprises. I think there's always going to be surprises all the time in the draft.
It'll be interesting to see if we look back and, like, the guys that were drafted after their freshman year this year, like the Fears and like all those kind of guys, if they end up being, like, amazing. Because what they did was they showed us – even as freshmen, they could be really good in college basketball, and that actually – because in years past, a lot of guys, like, there were a lot of freshmen that weren't any good. You can go back to even, like – I remember, like, Drew Holiday's year at UCLA was abysmal.
can still have a great career.
Great career.
You still have a great career.
Yes.
I mean, just because there's so many
factors. I'm saying, like, guys don't do that anymore, right? No. Like, I mean, I don't think it's going to happen.
They leave.
Yes.
Like,
and they don't go
pro. Stojakovic's kid is transferred for, like, the fourth time.
Who had a pitiful freshman season and, like, went back. Some of those, they were just, college was always just going to be a one-stop shop. Yeah. They were going to go there for a year. They weren't even going to go to classes the second semester. Seriously.
I know.
I don't care.
I know. It really, it does. I mean,
I think it's better.
NBA people for so long have said to me, like, ever since I've started doing this for a decade now, they're like, yeah, I wish we could see these guys for longer.
Yep.
For all the reasons we're talking about, not just on the court, not just player development, but mental development as well. And so this year, I mean, Brad Stevens had an interesting quote when he talked about the depth of the second round. He's like, well, this is the NIL, but I'm not sure it'll be like this every year. Because next year, we'll see. Maybe guys stay a third year.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll decide to leave after another year. Like, it's hard to know exactly how things will develop.
And I kind of think, you know, I kind of think that the second round, we look now.
They should add a third round, by the way. Too many guys trying to go undrafted. It, like, ruins the whole second
round. We look at the second round, though, and undrafted, I think, much differently than we ever did before, because we have to. Because, number one, they're great values if you hit them.
Yes.
But number two, you look at them, and it was like guys never hit. Like, it was very few and far between if you got a second rounder. And then you look up and you're watching the finals, and it's Nembhard. And it's Caruso. And it's Dort. And it's like Aaron Wiggins.
Even a Jalen Williams type,
like,
who played some important minutes for OKC in their journey there.
Bunch of guys. Yeah. A ton
of
them.
And I mean J-Will, not J-Dub,
yeah,
who just got the max extension.
Well, and the guy that started at small forward for Memphis last year is Jalen Wells.
Yeah, I know.
Right?
Yep.
And it's like, I think now there's going to be a bunch more of those guys. And part of that is they haven't made it. Right? You kind of – sometimes I wonder if the second-round guys like those Aaron Wigginses, like those Carusos, like whatever, what if we would have put $10 million in their pocket immediately.
It's hard to know.
Right? It's hard to know.
It is.
But those guys had to fight for their jobs.
Yep.
And so it created this. And now you're seeing, especially because you have to pay your best players $100 bazillion, you're seeing a bunch of those guys have, like, big impacts on teams.
I do think the meaning of going undrafted has changed because of how agents steer guys intentionally to go undrafted. Like, we will always say, Austin Reeves went undrafted, but really he would have been picked in like the 30s or 40s
right,
if his agent had done that. Ryan Nembhard, who had a great first game for the Mavericks, 21 points, hit a go-ahead three-pointer.
Five assists.
Oh, he was awesome. He was incredible. Looked just like he did at Gonzaga last year. He steered his way to go undrafted.
Yep.
So it's like these guys that are undrafted, they're forever go down as undrafted. Well, kind of, sort of.
Yeah.
They probably would have been drafted in the 40s if the right team were picking there. But things have changed in the NBA.
I like it, though. And I think it's made for a better summer league, too.
I totally agree. I think so far the games I've watched, it's competitive. A lot of high-flying athletes and, like, trying hard. Good
effort. They look more like men now.
Not just jacking
shots. They look like men now.
Yes.
Like, and they actually, like, run an offense.
I agree. I totally agree with you.
It's crazy.
I know. It's different than it was when we first started.
Yes.
For you,
kids.
Before me. Whereas before, it was just
kids.
Hero ball after shot after shot after shot. Disgusting to watch.
Kids and horrible basketball players. Honestly.
I know. Like, I know. And now it's a circus. I mean, you see all the people walking behind us. So many people come now. It used to be dead.
I know.
You could be able to, like, sit close to the court, no problem.
Slammed
before.
Here.
I know.
Like,
it's
awesome. You see people, fans from everywhere.
Right,
I saw a father and son that were walking in. One of them had you would love this. One of them had a Marcus Smart Celtics, and the son, Kemba Walker Celtics.
Wow, Kemba Walker.
Who's here?
Wow. Oh, Kemba's here?
Yeah. He was at the Adidas event last night. You know, he's an assistant for Charlotte.
Yep.
I don't know if he's coaching their summer league team or not, but.
Cool.
We're
getting old when Kemba Walker's starting to coach now.
Bro, if you ever see him, if you ever been around him, the fact that he was as awesome as he was at the size
he's like a normal-looking dude.
It's unfathomable that he could have been awesome.
Even,
you know what I mean?
Even Isaiah Thomas, Celtics Isaiah Thomas, he was wide.
Yes.
He had football player.
And he had long arms.
Yes, exactly.
They finished to the side or whatever. Kemba Walker's just not a big guy at all. Like, tiny.
Yes. Chris, thanks for joining
me. Good seeing
you,
man.
I appreciate you joining
me. All the way out in Las Vegas.
Oh, my God.
And you're back on the East Coast now, huh?
I moved back to Mass. Yep, it's good being back on the East Coast. I was just tired of L.A. I was ready to move back to Mass. I missed Green.
They wore you down.
Yeah, I don't know if it wore me down as much as I
did. They wore you down.
I just missed the green. I missed being near friends and family. And even though I'm single and childless, it was more of a place to lay my roots than LA.
I got you.
You know?
You having trouble finding chargers for that car?
No.
You had chargers everywhere in LA.
No issues
at
all.
You can't spit without spitting on a charger in LA.
No, there's
you
got to
drive
plenty.
To Brockton, Massachusetts.
No, I'm not driving to Brockton anymore.
No. You don't even go back to the hometown, huh?
No, I'll drive through sometimes.
Yep.
But, you know, I'm not living there now.
You're in Boston proper?
No. I'm outside of Boston.
Oh, you're just in Massachusetts.
Just in Mass,
oh,
yes.
What is your exact address, Kevin? All right.
Berto, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, man. Anytime. Thanks, brother.
Thank you.
We'll be right back after this break.
Back to the Kevin O'Connor Show. Joining me are the new owners of the Minnesota Timberwolves and Lynx, Mark Laurie and Alex Rodriguez. Congratulations, guys. How you doing?
Thank you.
I got to make an admission first, A-Rod.
Okay. Oh, gosh.
I grew up a Boston Red Sox fan.
I knew that. I used to hate you. I've gotten to a point where I can smell you guys.
I mean, you broke my heart when you almost became a Red Sox. Almost.
By the way, my signature was on. We only needed one signature. We had Bud Selig. We had Tom Warner and John Henry, myself, and we needed Don Fehr. But Don Fehr, the head of the union, wouldn't let me concede all that money going back. So,
hey, I mean, look.
The rest is history.
It worked out. Red Sox won titles. You won a title with the Yankees. And here you are, owner of the Minnesota Timberwolves. A-Rod, when did the thought of becoming a team owner first enter your mind when you were playing?
You know, I was telling Mark, sometime when I was an 18 years old or so, I was playing Instructional League. And I remember picking up a magazine, Forbes. And I remember kind of looking at all the team owners, and about two-thirds of them at that time were real estate. And I said, man, there must be something to this real estate thing. So I just, you know, a couple years later, I was like 21, 22, I made my first investment. I bought a duplex, multifamily apartment, and then I bought a fourplex and an eightplex. And over the last 17 years or so, we've acquired almost 20,000 keys, meaning 20,000 multifamily apartments. And we buy them, we fix them, and we refi them, we buy them, we fix them, and we sell them. And I've been doing that over and over again, and it was around that time that I started at least thinking about it. But, you know, once I connected with Mark, we took a run at the Mets. Thank God we lost. Steve Cohen's doing a great job with the New York Mets today, and then this opportunity came to us, and Mark and I jumped all over it.
How about you, Mark? Was this ever something at a younger age that you dreamed of?
I grew up in Staten Island, New York, you know, playing hoops in the, you know, playground, and it was very clear that I wasn't going to be a professional athlete, unlike Alex here.
We realized that early.
And yeah, very very early. This is, it's at that time that, you know, you switch from, okay, if I'm not going to be a professional athlete, then maybe I can own a team one day. But this is like coming from nothing. It was just nothing but a crazy, wild childhood dream. I never really thought about it. You know, it wasn't something I just carried with me. It really wasn't until Alex, introduced me to his group buying the New York Mets, that I started to get excited about the possibility, because I had no idea. You know, I thought you had to buy a team, you had to come up with $2 billion cash and write a check. I'm like, well, I can't do that. But I think, you know, after the Mets situation, I kind of had the bug, and Alex and I became great friends. We had this opportunity with the Wolves, and we jumped on it.
Now, can you guys paint a picture for me? Because you've talked about how things can change in Minnesota, building a new arena and everything there, like some of the changes you've made already. And 10 years from now, in 2035, how does the Minnesota Timberwolves brand change? How does it evolve in these 10 years?
Kevin, I'm going to take a page out of your book. I mean, look what happened in 2002 when you had those great owners come in Boston, right? And you saw the same thing in Chicago. So Chicago went over 100 years without winning a title. Red Sox went almost 90 years without winning a title. Now you've won four over the last 20 years. And it starts with great ownership, with a big vision, with this is a new era. Like, I don't care what happened. Then you saw the way you guys used to talk. We don't care about history. We're going to win. So you got to put that North Star out there first. Then you have to deploy the capital. Then you have to bring in the best people, all the things. And then you had a great architect in Theo Epstein. So the same architect went to Chicago and broke that curse. We have Tim Connelly. So,
and you guys targeted Tim, right? Yes.
Big time.
Yes.
Big time. Mark came up with the idea that we should go get Tim Connelly. I had to go Google who Tim Connelly was, because I'm a baseball
guy. The guy who drafted Jokic.
There you go. And then we're off to the races. Yeah. But the one thing that doesn't change is the vision, the core values, bringing in the best people in the world, and then getting out of the way and letting great people do their work.
Absolutely. And sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to say, you know, we would love to win a championship, hopefully multiple in the next 10 years. But, you know, a lot of things have to go your way, and it's still a bit of luck involved. But I think either way you look at it, in 2035, hopefully people will admire the Timberwolves and Lynx as organizations for the values that we live, the way we treat people, the kind of people we bring into the organization, the culture we create. Like, those are the kinds of inputs that are controllable and that we're going to be the best in class at.
And sure. And I think, you know, you're hitting on something when it comes to, like, hiring Tim Connelly. To me, like, growing up a Boston sports fan, the number one thing I thought about when it comes to the success of those teams is ownership that empowered the front office to make tough decisions. It happened with the Celtics, with Wick Rosbeck and Danny Ainge. He trades Antoine Walker as soon as he's hired, pretty much a fan favorite. He always made tough moves. It happened with the Red Sox. They trade Nomar, a fan favorite. A tough move for, you know, lesser-known names. It helps them win their first championship in 04. That happened with the Patriots, always trading star players to bring in younger guys sometimes who they had ready. Sometimes the fan base isn't going to like that, but the front office knows this is for the best. With you guys, how do you expect your relationship with Tim Connelly to develop? I mean, because you're more of a baseball guy, admittedly, you said during your presser today. Is it about empowering Tim to do what he does best and supporting him, or do you guys want some input when it comes to the decisions being made?
Yeah, no, it's 100%. The philosophy is to build the right culture, the right vision strategy, get the right structure, and bring the very best people in and go and empower them. But I think it's important that Tim, the other executives, all understand the nuances of the vision and strategy. I think that's where things sometimes break down, and understand that we've got a real long-term orientation, and making sure that the incentives that the executives have align with that long-term orientation. And if we have that, then it's magic, and we just let Tim go do his thing.
One of the things you mentioned today during your presser that I was really interested by was jump.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like a cool way to move up with your seat in, like, a legal way, you know?
Alex always talks about that. I love that.
Not having to go around the bouncer.
I know. Try to
Me and my dad used to do that all the time growing up.
Throw off the ushers, you know? Look over there.
I'll tell you, it was always frustrating. He'll give you more of the technical, but from my fan experience, I could never afford really good seats. My mom worked two jobs, the whole thing, right? So our job was, how do we get into the arena for the lowest price possible, and then we got to work our way down to, by the seventh inning, we'll be behind home plate.
For sure.
And it was always so frustrating when we would look down and all these seats were empty. It just drove me crazy. I'm like, where's Uber and Airbnb inside the arena, inside the building? So this has brought a modern technology. We have incredible engineers. And I think our goal, Kevin, is to get the experience and the relationship from the fan base to us with no second or third party, right? Direct to consumer. The more information we have about our fans, the more we can serve as a 30-year fan versus a brand-new fan, and that's really important.
Yeah.
And so basically you're going to be able to go into an app, or maybe you get a notification, seat 2, row H has opened up. And it's
reverse auction.
Yeah.
Just keep coming down until somebody hits it.
So, yeah. Like, in 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter, it might be an 8-point game. Someone's going to leave their kids, you know, get school in the morning. You can buy those three tickets.
And they're going to be cheap, too.
Wow.
Because, yeah.
That's cool.
Imagine, Kevin, you sitting in a Celtics game.
Yeah.
And, you know, if the seats are a few thousand dollars on the floor, that you can buy them for, you know, $80. Yeah. And you might only get 5 minutes,
sure,
but at least you get the experience of what it feels
for
to sit on the floor, and you get your selfie with your kid or your family, and you're off
you
to
see
the
races. How fast it moves.
Oh, boy.
I mean, it's like, what a difference being
and
close.
It's fully integrated. The exchange is primary market, secondary market sale, merchandising, food. It's a fully integrated fan experience.
And less fees, better. Everything we're trying to do, Kevin, is fan-friendly. Like, we're obsessed with
including keeping
service.
The team in Minneapolis.
That's a no-brainer. That's done.
Is other suburbs 100%. A possibility?
I think a lot of things. It's too early to realize we're in Minnesota, but we're not moving the team from the state of Minnesota for sure.
That's good news. Yeah. And I mean, I think with you guys, it's interesting. Gobert, that trade was meant to accelerate things and help put a better winning team around Anthony Edwards. Edwards, at this point, he's been to 2 West Finals. Obviously, you guys lost both, but still young, still getting better. He's 23, right? You look at players recently that have won the NBA Finals. SGA was 26. Tatum was 26. Giannis was 26. LeBron, Steph, they were 27 when they won their first. Jokic was 28. Durant was 28. So when you think about, like, where Ant is, Mark, right now, having the success he's had, making the improvements as he has, how do you balance between, like, patience with him, knowing that he's not quite at his prime yet, versus aggression with wanting to build around him and winning now?
Yeah, I mean, just we're just looking to make smart decisions, right? And you know, we haven't made it to the Western Conference Finals 2 years in a row. I think, you know, we have a situation where we've got a very healthy roster, and I think if you look at all the contracts, they're all on good contracts, you would say, at or in the money. We don't have any contracts that are bad contracts. It's really hard to recover from a bad contract, but if you've got a lot of good contracts and
some
a lot
people
of
would argue Gobert is. I would not. I got to go. I love Gobert.
No,
I love Rudy.
Definitely not. Just looking at his impact on winning, I mean, no.
He's one of the best defenders in the world.
Kevin, yeah. If you look at his career, I bet he's in the top five winningest players. So all he does is win. He goes to the playoffs.
Yeah, I would agree.
Every year he's been to the playoffs.
He's a floor raiser.
100%. And he's completely converted the whole franchise. Yes. When he came before and after, Rudy's a monster, and we love him.
I totally agree with you. I mean, I'm a Rudy guy.
And a great role model.
Rudy's got a lot of haters, as you guys have known. But I've always been a big Rudy Gobert guy.
Yeah, we love him.
And you guys drafted Yoan Berenguer in the first round, another international guy in the second round. So now he has some support behind him as well, gives you some flexibility as well. Now, I am curious, A-Rod, like you talked during your presser today about, you know, you're a baseball guy, and you said you're kind of rounding first right now in your basketball knowledge. What are some specific things you've learned about team building in the NBA in your years now as you've pursued Minnesota Timberwolves ownership?
Well, Kev, like I said in the press conference, I mean, sports is sports, and winning is kind of evergreen for any sport. There's probably 70% that doesn't apply, but there's about 30 or more that does apply. And that's, you know, how you treat people, how you recruit people, how you enhance the experience when people come in the building. I'm a big believer that you either, you know, bring energy to the room or you take energy out of the room. And we're very fortunate. We have a lot of people in our ecosystem that bring a lot of energy, and everyone's aligned. And, you know, even like Anthony Edwards or young players being here, Finch, it's all support, and it feels really good. But I've been a world champion. I understand what it looks like and what it feels like. And I think that could be helpful.
Last thing I want to ask, Mark. I first heard of you prior to all of this with Minnesota. Okay. It was with Tolosa. Wanting to build a new city. And since we're here in Vegas, founded in 1905, and you see what it became in 100 years, there haven't been a lot of new cities built.
There hasn't been any new cities being built.
Irvine,
really.
California, but not a city like this. Columbia, Maryland was built, but it's not quite a city like this. Is Tolosa still in the works? Is that the possibility?
I mean, it's still in the works, but really it wasn't about building a city. It was about testing a new model for society. And that's really what it's about. And, yeah, I still have a lot of passion for that. And someday it'll happen.
Now, Kevin, let's tell you the difference about our partnership.
Yeah.
I mean, Mark in his off time is building cities. I can't build a deck. I mean, I'm like, with what time are you building a freaking city? He's like, yeah, it's going to be so passionate about it. Like, Mark, I'm dizzy. I can't build a deck, dude.
So is that how you spend your off time? When you're not thinking about Minnesota, you're thinking about, like, that's where your meetings are?
Yeah, but I also have a startup wonder. So,
how do you balance your time? Like, how do you like some, like, it's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I try to make things as efficient as possible and streamline everything else.
No waste of time.
And also, you know, make fast decisions. You know, don't waste time dwelling on stuff. Don't think about things that went wrong in the past. Don't worry about things in the future. Every minute of thought needs to be focused on moving the ball forward on one of the things that you're working on.
With making fast decisions, I mean, like, sometimes when you deliberate, like, within yourself and you debate within yourself, you just go back to what you initially thought in the first place. Is that kind of what you've learned, sticking with your first gut instinct?
I think gut instinct. I mean, even Rudy Gobert, right?
Five minutes
we made that decision, you know, after
Tim brought it up. It was a quick negotiation with that deal?
After Tim brought it up to us.
Yeah.
I mean. And the Tim decision, once Mark brought the name Tim Connelly to me, I went to work and did due diligence. I talked to Jerry West. I spoke to Pat Riley. Everybody had raving reviews. As you know, Kevin, he's just such a great guy. And
he's the coolest guy.
He is. And that's
just a normal dude.
and that took probably 10 minutes. I mean, we align very, very quickly on like 99% of the things we deal with. But every small decision adds into some big ripple effect in the future. So the key is, like Mark said, you have decisions every day, making them fast, making them sharp, and being able to put them behind you.
Yeah, if you can't make a decision fast, it's not the right decision.
Right.
If you need to think about it, it's a good point. It's a good way to put it. True in life, true in business as well.
Absolutely.
Mark, Alex, thank you guys for joining me. I really appreciate
so much,
it. Honored to meet you guys. Thank you.
Great.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Thanks, guys.
Right,
appreciate it. Congrats. Big thank you to Mark, Lori, A-Rod. Can't believe I interviewed Alex Rodriguez. Me at 15, 14 years old, I'd be saying, that's crazy. You got to ask him about slapping the ball on a Bronson Arroyo's hand. I did not get to that, but at least I got to tell him. that I used to hate him, which is definitely true. I still have some of those feelings buried deep down inside as I'm sitting right next to him. But big thank you to A-Rod and Mark for joining me, and obviously a huge thank you to my amazing friend, lifelong friend, Chris Vernon, for joining me to talk about everything going on in NBA Summer League. Looking forward to talking with Verno once again whenever we do it again. Next to Madison for being on the ground here in NBA Summer League, and everybody for helping produce these episodes that you're hearing recorded here in Las Vegas. Have a good day. Talk to you soon.